So welcome everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. Let me just say something about city meditation before we get into the talk. So as you heard in the kind of instructions I gave during the meditation, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of breath, mindfulness of the object of the senses, and learning to practice mindfulness and learning how to concentrate the mind are all essential qualities. They are the basis of developing what is called insight, looking really into the nature of the mind, the nature of thoughts, the nature of self, the fundamental things that we are confused about. But we won't go into that now. Mindfulness and concentration are really essential to have some degree of that, to be able to take the light of the mind and be able to focus it, again, like a flashlight. So if the light is very diffused, then it's hard to see clearly what you're looking at. But when you have a good flashlight that has enough light and you can hold it steady, your ability to accomplish things, both in a worldly way as well as a spiritual way, become possible. But there's also something else that's important to learn, that we learn in a sitting meditation, sort of a side benefit, but an essential one, is when we practice sitting meditation, and many of you who have been practicing, or even though who you came for the first time today, you notice that even though your object is to sit and practice mindfulness and concentration and develop greater ease and stability of mind, you might notice that on the way there, a lot's happening. Have you noticed that? All kinds of things can arise in your mind. Thoughts you like to have, thoughts you don't like to have, right? Thoughts you find attractive, pleasurable, quite proud of, and thoughts that you may find painful or kind of embarrassed to have, right? As well as you might find emotional states arise just while in the course of your meditation. As well as you may find other kinds of states arising. You may find yourself agitated. You may find yourself bored. This is boring. Nothing's going on. You might find yourself craving, you know, wanting to get up, wanting to go do something. You know what I mean? All kinds of things, right? And the wonderful thing about sitting meditation is you can't do any of that. See, you can't act out when you're sitting. And if you've made a commitment to sit, you can't act out. Now, most of the times, we don't even know when we are experiencing these kinds of afflictive emotions or afflictive mind states, even boredom or agitation or excitability or craving, because what do we do usually do? We act out. Immediately, we act out, right? And we don't even know it. We don't, you know, people find themselves at the fridge and they don't even know why. They're like in trance. Or turning on the TV, or turning on some kind of implement, or going on the computer, going shopping, and they don't even know why, right? Just impulse. But when you sit, and you've made a commitment to sit, again, there's a wonderful thing, because you can't get away from it. So if you do not find that in your sitting meditation, you are overcome with bliss, waves of oceanic bliss and peacefulness, that's okay. It is there, but it is covered up by all this stuff, right? And this stuff is not something to escape from. This stuff is not something to repress or deny all the things we do or act out. It is something we need to deal with. And so a sitting meditation, not moving, learning to be present, because all these mind states, where are they arising? Within our own minds and bodies, nowhere else. They're ours, but we've never taken responsibility for them. Right? Please take responsibility for whatever arises in your mind and learn to be present to it. That is one of the greatest gifts you can give yourself, because we don't realize how much of our activity in the world and the way we speak and, you know, just all the things we do are driven unconsciously by this stuff that's going on inside us. And it's just so familiar. It's so us. And we just act out immediately on it. We never know it's even there. We don't know how to deal with it. We want, you know, they talk in Buddhism about a spiritual path. They talk about freedom and liberation. You've heard these great terms, right? Well, it means freedom from, right? If we're still driven by all our unconscious impulses, if we are still driven because of our inability to be present to negative mind states or negative emotional states or negative memories, painful memories, but we are not free, are we? No. We are the slave. We are the servants of our own mind, rather than the master of it. Is that clear? And the master of it doesn't mean we beat it down. We're not that kind of master. We're not a cruel master. We're a wise and loving and compassionate master of our minds, right? We know how to be present to whatever's arising, and we know how to take care of it, and we know how to heal and transform it. Okay? So it is very important. That's why sitting, you know, a lot of people don't like sitting meditation. They much rather what? Listen to a Dharma talk, right? Read about spiritual matters. Because this is where it gets real, doesn't it? See, this is where it gets real. We can't fool ourselves anymore once we turn on the light and see what's going on inside. It gets very real in our face. And that's good. If we're serious about transforming, if we're serious about healing, well, what is it that has to be healed and transformed? You know, in reality, not abstractly, not as an idea, we have to heal and transform ourself, our mind, our emotions, our emotional life, our thoughts. Okay? So we can change our behavior. So we can change the way we speak. Is that clear? So that's a plug for sitting meditation. Side benefit. So don't be discouraged if it's not all a bed of roses. It will be. But, first we got to do the work. First we got to, you know, clear away the weeds. Dig up those ones that are deeply rooted. Turn over the soil. Start bringing in healthy nutrients, right? So the soil is now capable of growing things that are healthy, things that are beautiful. It's a process, right? Many people may wonder, gee, I read the books, I go to the Dharma talks, I go on retreat. Why is it still the same inside? Anybody here might wonder that. Well, it's often because if you plant seeds or seedlings in, you know, non-nutritious soil, it will not grow well, will it? Right? We know. Soil is important. Soil is essential quality. And the more nutritious your soil is, the easier it is to grow things. Right? So all the things that you want to become, all the kind of person you want to be in this world, in your relationships. I would imagine most people here would like to be a more loving, kinder, more open, caring, right? Patient human being, right? More relaxed. Those are all the flowers of practice. But you can't just plant them in non-nutritious or even toxic soil and expect they're going to grow the way you want. Is that clear? And many people get frustrated along the spiritual path because they think, you know, there's something wrong with me, right? I keep reading the books, I keep going to the talks, I keep trying to do the practices, but things don't change in any significant way. It still sort of feels the same way inside. And only each of us know what that means, okay? Because each of us are truly inside ourselves. Is that clear? But a lot of time it's we haven't done this prep work. Right? We haven't really taken a real look at the condition of our soil of our mind and what's already growing there. Right? To do that, we have to stop. Thich Nhat Hanh calls concentration samatha, stopping. We've got to stop running. We've got to stop acting out. We've got to stop our addiction to stimulation. And for many people, when you stop that, it's not as like the next day you wake up in bliss. No, it's a struggle. It feels uncomfortable. But you have to be willing to go through that to get to the other side. Is that clear? Good. Any questions about that? Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm curious to know, I don't know if you will address this, but what was it like for you when you went through the process?
Just like it'll be for you.
Yeah.
Just like it'll be for you. Yeah, I mean, people have different karma, right? We all have different types of minds based on our past, right? What is our mind? Why is the stuff that goes on in our mind, the thoughts, the feelings, the perceptions, and memory? It's all because of past causes and conditions that have left their imprints. That's all that's going on in there. Okay? It's not as if we like chose this mind, right? It's because we were so unconscious that it just sort of became what it became because we went through all life just kind of being imprinted unconsciously. Okay? So we all have our mind. Some people, it's heavy duty. Some people, it's not so heavy duty, you know, based on your past. It's as simple as that. Right, so we all begin uniquely, and we all begin at different places. But essentially, you know, it's a process we all need to go to. Whether the imprinting is deep, or whether the imprinting is light, we all still have to work through our stuff. Again, many people want to bypass their stuff. They don't want to deal with their stuff. They're sick of their stuff, right? But This is a path of healing and transformation. That means, I mean, what are you healing and transforming, if not your stuff? Right? Is that clear? I mean, that's the path. Right? And once that has occurred, now we have rich, healthy soil that we can grow deep understanding, deep wisdom, deep insight, deep compassion, deep love, deep openness. Right? So, anyhow, we are, actually we'll talk about this in a second. So, what we've been teaching from since the fall are these mind trainings, this Lojong, text of seven major points that have subpoints that end up come to about 58 very pithy one sentence trainings of the mind, which really, again, for those of you who've been coming or aware of this, really the whole breadth of the whole Buddhist teachings, Mahayana teachings, are in this text, right? And there are many, many commentaries. This is a very traditional one by Jamyang Kangchrol, a 19th century Tibetan master. But again, in our practice community, people who are involved in study are looking at various commentaries. And so for those of you who have not come in the past weeks, there are these many texts, as well as in on our own website, there are many, many talks. We've had retreats, we've had intensives, we've had all kinds of things over these past months to elucidate these trainings, including the one that I began 2 weeks ago on this. We're now in the section called The Extent of Proficiency in Mind Training. Okay, and again, for those of you interested, I really explained last time why this is so important. There has to be criteria that we can assess whether our spiritual life, our meditative life, is getting us anywhere. Now, there may be some people here that go, but hold on. I thought we're all inherently Buddha, right? I thought, it's all about the journey. What's this about evaluation of outcome? Well, it's, you know, the dualistic mind is always thinking what? This and that, either or. The non-dualistic mind is able to go both and. Is that clear? It's a very different way. Yeah, it's both and, right? Yeah, the reason I'm walking this path is because I want to get to the mountaintop, right? Okay, you know, why am I on this trail? Because I want to get to the mountaintop. That's why I'm not on that trail. Is that clear? I mean, that's just common sense. There's a reason I'm walking this path, and there's somewhere I want to get to. Right? Now, you know, give up all hope for results. If you're always looking at the mountain, you will never what? Be able to, you know, you'll be tripping all the time. Right? Okay. So when you're on the path that takes you to the mountain, you don't need to have to keep always obsessing about the mountain, do you? Your focus is on each step and what's going on, you know, each part of the journey, right? So the journey and the goal of the journey are the same, right? Now, again, if you've been on this, if you've been walking this trail for 6 months or a year or 2 years, you have to evaluate, right? Am I, you know, it's like, I don't know, it seems like I'm in the same place. This looks all familiar to me, right? You know, that's what, you know, I'm like, oh, you know. There has to be some way that we every now and then step back and say, is this working, right? You see, this is important. Because it's supposed to work. If I'm sick and I'm taking medicine, should I not evaluate whether I'm getting healthier or not? Of course we would. And if I'm on a journey to get somewhere and I keep finding myself in the same place, I need to evaluate what's going on. Right? So this section about called the extent of proficiency in mind training, now this is relating to these 58 mind trainings and saying, well, which are all quite wonderful, you know, am I becoming more proficient? Whether it's our career, whether it's our, you know, relationships, you know, am I kind of beginning to get it? How do I know I'm beginning to get it? Because it's becoming easier, right? So, we worked on two of them last time. The first was all Dharma has a single purpose. So Dharma here is meaning all the teachings and practices of Buddhism has a single purpose. What is that purpose? To tame, quoting here, ego clinging. As you practice Dharma work and mind training, ego clinging should be decreasing. If your efforts in Dharma do not counteract ego clinging, your practice is meaningless. Okay, so this is one important criteria. No matter what, quote unquote, spiritual meditative practices you're doing, in my life, is it less about me? Right? Is it less egocentric? Right? Is it more other-centric? Am I opening to the world and to others? Right? Am I coming out of the imprisonment of self-absorption, which is a painful state to be, and opening to the world and to others? Right? That's one criteria that can be the result of meditative practice and as well as the result of all the other practices we do in cultivating loving kindness, service, you know, compassion. Again, am I a more selfless person in life? Okay, one criteria. That's the first one. I may be a better meditator than I used to be. I may be able to concentrate more. I may be able to stay with the practice more. That's good. But that is not proficiency in Dharma. Proficiency in Dharma means that it's giving you results in your life. You're a calmer person. You're a happier person. You're a more loving person. Is that clear? Now, this doesn't mean you gotta, you know, get down on yourself. You just understand, oh, I've learned the base. You know what I mean? Let's say you've learned the basics. You know, I can do the scales, right? I can do the scales. I can do some of the practices. Yeah, but people aren't going to want to sit down and listen to you play the scales, right? You see what I'm saying? That's good that you're becoming more proficient in the scales, but it's only when you begin to play some nice music, right, that you're going to offer that you know, oh, I'm becoming more proficient. You may become more proficient in a technique, but you're not able yet to do something that is pleasing to others. Is that clear? So we may become proficient in the techniques of practice, but how do I know whether I'm really developing myself in terms of Dharma? The second one of the two judges rely on the principal one. Again, I've given teachings on that. Again, it's sort of what I just said. There are two judges. So the judges of everybody else, and there's me. Right? So when I say me, I mean the me of all of us. Right? And only we know what's going on in here. Okay? So even though everybody may think, oh, they're the nicest person in the world, and you're the most compassionate person in the world, and you're the most selfless person in the world, and you're the, right? Only you know what the truth is. Because you're what? You're inside here. You know what's going on. Is that clear? So it is again saying, don't care whether, you know, you have the applause of the world. Right? You want your own applause. Because you know inside what's really going on and how you're changing and what needs to be changed. Is that clear? So it's very powerful. That's what it says of these two judges. rely on the primary one. Again, that's not your critical voice. That's not your inner critic. You know what I'm saying? It's not. He's not talking about any of that. He's talking about your self-awareness of yourself, your understanding of all the qualities that you want to be developing, or maybe even pretending, you know. Again, people get Academy Awards for what? For good acting, right? They could be the biggest jerk in the world, and yet, you know, they could act like what? A very nice person, a compassionate person, a wise person. They could even act as a Dharma teacher, right? A good actor, and look really good. Okay, so we don't want to be actors, right? So, of the two judges, rely on the principal one. And if anyone's interested, Dharma talk from 2 weeks ago gets into that. So those are the first two. All Dharma is a single purpose. Of the two judges, rely on the principal one. The third one is, again, how do I judge that I am becoming more proficient in this spiritual practice, Dharma practice? And the third one says, always have the support of a joyful mind. And let me just read his commentary. When there is never any fear or despair, no matter what adversity or suffering is encountered, when difficulty is taken as an aid to mind training, and you always have the help of a joyful mind, then you have acquired proficiency in mind training. When adverse conditions come, meditate joyfully. In addition, learn to take joyfully all the adversity that others experience. Call that a high bar. Yeah, wonderful to have a high bar like that. Now again, like with the first two, you know, don't make it black or white, either or. Right? It's a continuum. Is that clear? It's a continuum. We are growing, we are developing, but we're able to kind of step back and observe ourselves and make some comments on ourselves. Again, you know, because in our society, ooh, the inner critic, you know what I'm saying, we're really very sensitive to that. Is that clear? Many people are. Self-negativity, that negative way. This is not that at all. Okay. Is that clear? So please don't confuse it. You know, many people who have a strong self-hate or self-critic, they love this stuff. You know what I mean? Wow. God, I'm just a rotten practitioner. Never have the support of a joyful mind. There I go. Another, I failed again. You know, it's just people who have a critical mind, they just love this stuff. It's a whole, you know what I mean? Their worldly life, they had endless reasons why to get down on themselves. And now they've entered the spiritual life and they get a whole new set of reasons to get down on themselves. I mean, this is like, you know, like a whole new field they never thought existed that they can okay. So it's not that. And for some of you who always go down that road of self-criticism, it's not that. That's why I'm, you know, it's just noting, okay? It's just like noting if you're trying to hit a right note, oh, I've hit a wrong note, and correcting it, right? You see, if you hit a wrong note, you don't have to stop and beat yourself up for 15 minutes or throw things or slam or, you know, right? You just, oh, I hit a wrong note. What's the right note? That one? Oh. You see how simple it is? It's just knowing the difference between a right note and a wrong note and being able to correct. So again, when we're looking at these things, you know, see yourself as someone in process, and this is helpful to every now and step back and evaluate. If you find, wow, when I really observe my mind all day, a joyful mind? Not even close. Okay? You see what I'm saying? Okay, then just, oh, that's interesting. That's all. That's interesting. I wonder what it is that I'm doing, right, that's supporting a joyless mind. And let me go back and look at the teachings and see what is it that supports a joyful mind. Is that clear? I mean, this is so, it's so important because so many people, again, make their spiritual life just a mirror of their worldly life. They bring their self and all its issues into this other way of where they're trying to unpack all that. So please be careful. Right. You're trying to transform, to cultivate a different kind of mind. This is the mind we're cultivating of acceptance and understanding, of love and compassion. Right? And by the way, those sustain a joyful mind. Okay. Now, please understand, when he talks about joyful mind, he's not saying, you know, that you're always laughing. Okay? That you're always laughing. And it's ha, ha, ha. Okay? It means that inwardly there's just a state of well-being and ease and what we might call just a general state of happiness. Now, why aren't we happy? Right? Why don't we have always a support of a joyful mind? It's because we are cultivating thoughts, feelings, perceptions, mind states, or ruminating or worrying about things that do not produce that. Again, remember, this mind is simply the product of cause and effect. If so many of the causes in our life that have conditioned our mind are negative, then we'll have a negative mind. That's okay. From this moment on, we need to start cultivating different ones. So again, if you find that your mind is not that joyful during the day, always look for causes. Okay? What is causing me to have an unhappy mind? Well, maybe if I spend a lot of my day, what? Cultivating resentment, cultivating irritation, frustration, stressed, worry, anxious, sad, judgment, criticism. You know what I mean? Jealousy, envy. How do those mind states feel? Anybody ever experience those mind states? Are they joyful? Do you feel lots of joy? What? No. Right? So we have to understand that our lack of joy or happiness is not a given. If you watch your mind, and again, mindfulness is the lamp, is the light, you will see clearly. If you just watch your mind throughout the day, you will see clearly whether your mind is joyful or not. And when you look for causes, which means, well, what am, you know, it's like, you know, it's like people begin to look at their health issues as maybe related to their diet, right? Oh, well, maybe if you're eating a lot of junk food all day, non-nutritious food, maybe that's why you don't have any energy. Maybe that's why you have all these physical ailments. Is that, you know, it's as simple as that. We don't realize that there's actually something in Buddhism called the four nutriments, of which we look at the things our minds consume in the same way we look at the things our bodies consume. Right? And if we look at what my mind's consuming, not only externally in terms of, you know, what my senses are taking in and the kind of conversations I have and the kind of movies I watch and the kind of things I read, but it's also kind of the things I think about, the things I ruminate about. Right? The things I direct my attention, my will towards, all these are conditioning my mind. Always have the support of a joyful mind. So, when we begin to remove all the heavy wrappings of all these emotional, negative emotional, afflictive emotional feelings and mind states, just by the removal of that, allows the natural kind of calmness and awareness and kind of well-being that is really in our minds. It is what our minds really are. Once you take off the coverings, that naturally by itself will come forward. Now we have healthy ground. And if you are cultivating through your practice compassion, loving kindness, patience, understanding, you know, really cultivating those kinds of ways of thinking and being in the world, if you're focusing on people's positive qualities, not their negative qualities, right? If you're really replacing that critical mind with an understanding and supportive mind, if what you're consuming in terms of media and movies and music and websites and information, if they're not so negative, so heavy, right? Can you see? And you are actually consuming things that actually enhance your mood, enhance your well-being, enhance your mind state. You know, you are also then planting, okay? Planting things that will facilitate this joyful mind, this happy mind, this mind that feels differently. We are talking about transforming the mind. Okay. For many people, that's kind of hard to get. Okay. Because many of us, we grew up in a culture where you know, oftentimes the goal is what? Coping better, right? See, coping skills are often the goal. If I can cope with things better. And obviously, coping with things better is an advance over not coping with things better. Is that clear? But coping with things better does not necessarily transform anything. It doesn't really change anything. It's just that, well, things are probably less stressful, right? But nothing's really significantly different, right? And so many of us, we approach our spiritual life with this sense of remediation. If I can just lower the intensity of my negativity, right? If I can just lower the frequency, lower the intensity of my emotional afflictions and my acting out, then I'll be happy. And again, from a certain point of view, that is better, right? Definitely is. But we have to understand that the Buddhist path and the Buddhist teaching is about freedom and liberation. It's really about transformation. It's about finding another way to be in this life and to live in this life. And that possibility, potential, is in every one of us. That's what the whole path is about, how to do that. It's as simple as that. Right? You want to get to the mountaintop? You what? You find the path that'll take you there. You investigate. Investigate different paths. Not all paths go to the same place. Some people say that, oh, all spiritual paths, they all go to the same place. That's crazy. Different paths, different roads take you to different places. Right? You know, if you think all roads go to the same place, you know, be careful. You know, if you want to get to Miami, don't get on the road that goes to Gainesville. Goes to Atlanta. Again, could be an interesting journey, but it doesn't go to Miami. Is that clear? Not all spiritual paths are the same. Not all religious paths are the same. They have certain common characteristics. That is true. And hopefully all of them bring benefit to their practitioners. But they all don't go to the same place. You know, you need to investigate paths, and you need to also investigate your own aspirations. You know, where do I want to go in this life? So I guess what I'm saying to you is, please, again, one can, the Buddhist path is a path, right? And, you know, one can take it to the first, you know, like, what do they do when they climb Everest? You know, they have base camp, you know, like, you know, base camp's pretty good, right? Pretty high up. It's quite an experience to be in base camp. But some people like to go out for a hike. Some people like to what? Like a day hike. But some people go, no, I want to go further, so I'm going to take along some, you know, equipment so I can camp, so I can get further. Does that mean that the person is out for a day hike and the person who's gone on a 10-day hike to the top of the mountain both can't enjoy themselves? Yeah. It could be in a short-term basis. The one who's taking the day hike may be enjoying themselves more than the one with the, 80-pound pack on their back. But again, you know, it's where do we want to go? And it's important to understand that the Buddhist path promises a lot. It promises freedom and liberation. It promises a different mind that sees differently, that views differently, and that what's being said here feels differently. This is the wonderful thing about a path and having teachers who tell us that, right? Because in our own experience, that's not our experience, right? So if you live in the desert, you couldn't even imagine Florida, could you? Right? It could be some kind of imaginary thing that people talk about. There is this place. It's green all year round. And it rains and it rains. And it's surrounded by water. Right? Somebody who's always lived in the desert will think that's what? A fairy tale. Right? Because their own experience is not that. Right? Do you understand that? Right? That's what it's like for us. So Buddhas and masters appear in the world and they talk to us about freedom and liberation and understanding and completely being free of emotional afflictions and having this open, spacious mind, etc. And we go, you know, maybe for them, right? Or maybe that's just, maybe they just, the talk has been passed on all these generations. But it's not actually experienced. So in the same way, if you could imagine in that desert community in which there is a kind of this myth or fairy tale about this place called Florida, where everything is green and rain comes all the time and surrounded by water, right? Anytime you want to go for a swim, you just get in your car and you jump in the water and you don't have to dig down that far to find water, right? One day somebody shows up there saying what? It's not a myth. It's not a story. There is a real place called Florida, right? And not only is there a real place called Florida, but I can show you how to get there. Now, who's going to believe him or her? Many people are going to go, no, he's crazy. Right? It's crazy. I mean, you know, we know what the world is. It's dry and arid, right? Hardly ever rains, hot all the time. That's the world. That's what we know. And God, who wants to leave here? You know, we're kind of adjusted to this. Most of us have kind of adjusted to our neuroses. Right? We're well-adjusted neurotics. Most of us have adjusted to our afflictions, especially if we can tone them down a little bit. Right? We used to really just be very destructive, but now I've kind of toned them down a bit. right? I've kind of become sort of comfortably uncomfortable in life. Right? Many of us go, that's enough. So even though, you know, so that person comes, shows up, talks about Florida, most people are not going to believe them, him or her, right? As well as when they're told you can't get there in a day, a lot of people are going to go, well, yeah, I don't want to travel that far, right? So often very few leave the desert and undertake the journey to Florida to see for themselves. In the same way, many of us, we love to read spiritual books, we love to listen to Dharma talks, and we love to talk about it too, don't we? But the actual day-to-day journey, the actual day-to-day walking, and dealing with all the things that occur, we're often not up for that. But we know Florida exists. We're all here, aren't we? To somebody else, this is a dream, a myth, a story, a fantasy, but we know it's real. So the Buddhas and the Masters tell us, because they're there, they tell us it's real and everybody and anybody can get there. Is that clear? Always have the support of a joyful mind, even in adverse conditions. Now that may sound bizarre, right? Even in the face of difficulty, even in the face of other people's suffering and my own suffering, how do I maintain this joyful mind? Well, because you have a mind that is open and spacious and accepting and wise, can see causes of what's going on, knows how to work with whatever's arising, knows how to transform whatever's arising, so it doesn't throw us. Adversity doesn't throw us. Difficulty doesn't throw us. Suffering, our own or others, doesn't throw us. Okay? They're just part of experience. I don't have to get all hot and bothered by adversity. I understand adversity is just a word for what? For something that's going on. Right? Isn't that what's happening? Something's going on. When we say, whatever's going on, I don't want to go on, we call that what? Adversity. But, you know, that's our label on just something that's rising in life or in somebody else's life. And when we stop breaking it up into negative and positive, aversive and wanted, and we just are open to the unfolding of life as it is. When good things happen, we're happy. But even when bad things happen, we're not as happy as when the good things happen. But when the quote-unquote bad things happen, we're okay with that too. Is that clear? We have the children today? Okay. So let me stop and take some questions. Is it a little warm in here? Yeah, why don't we lower the AC a little? Just to wake everybody up. Yes, Evelyn, yes. Of course. Yeah. So don't, for those of you who come from a background where that sounds a little like there's only one way, that's not what I'm saying. Okay, right. There are many, many roads that go to Miami, but the roads that go to Miami also don't go to, you know, aren't the same roads that go to Ocala. Of course, you could go to Miami through Ocala, but that would be kind of a long way, you know what I mean? Especially if you wanted to go to Miami. So yes, you know, it's like there are many ways up the mountain. Right? Yeah. Some are very straight and direct. Some may be more meandering. Yeah, so I'm not saying like Buddhism is the only way or this is the only way. I'm just saying roads lead somewhere. And one should know where the road leads in relationship to where one wants to go. Is that clear? So if you want to go to Miami, you have choices, right? Yeah, Evelyn has choices. Do I take, you know, do I go the fastest way, the most direct way there, right? Or do I kind of take a road to meander? Do I just go directly or do I stop along the way? Gee, you know, I've never been to Sarasota. I've never been to Venice. I wonder what's going on in Fort Myers. You know, some, you know, so there are many ways to do it, but it depends on you. You see? If you want to get to Miami today, then you just stay on the road. Right? If you want to give yourself 3 to 5 days, you can. Is that clear? So I'm glad you asked that. So if anybody else thought I was saying, you know, we're the only ones, I'm not saying that. I'm not even saying what the mountain is. Everybody's going to decide what mountaintop they want to get to. Is that clear? Yeah, I'm just speaking metaphorically. But okay, good. Other questions? Yes.
And a healthy activity that helps us to shift our thoughts and to refocus,
and then an activity
that just feels good, but it may not be healthy, but we could misinterpret it as, oh, I feel grateful now.
Yeah, so that's very good. So what we would say is, in from a worldly sense, there is happiness. I mean, see, it's the same word. So there's worldly happiness, right? Now, what do we know? The characteristic of worldly happiness, it is based on a situation, right? Like you said, something that I want to happen happens, and I'm what? Happy, right? So it is. We know that this kind of happiness is a worldly happiness because it's based on a situation that's occurring. That basically is something I want, I've already set up that I want to occur. That's why I'm happy, okay? Also, it is short-lived, right? You will find that that happiness only lasts as long as usually the activity. And for many people, they can't do that. So they, you know, a lot of people, even after the activity, the pleasurable activity ends, they still have to think about it and talk about it. They're trying to what? Milk it. You know, I want to keep this one going. So then we just keep reviewing, and that was a great time I had. Wow, that was so, right? You know, it's that show, that's already telling you this is not it. Okay, what we're talking about is something that is pretty continuous, because it's coming from within. Within meaning your own mind. You have a joyful mind. You're bringing that to situations. It's not like you're dependent on situations for it, and that's a very different. It may, like you said, feel the same, but again, because it's predicated on an experience and because it is short-lived, and it can easily turn into the opposite. See, what happens if that which you were expecting to happen, which made you happy, what if it didn't happen? Then how do you feel? Disappointed, sad. You see how quickly it goes south. So we're not talking about that. That's worldly happiness, and that's, I mean, again, that's something we all know, and that's something we live with. It's okay. I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, when things go well, you can't be happy, or if you're in a pleasurable experience, but it's not the basis. See, for worldly people, that is the basis of our happiness, right? If I can just get as many pleasurable experiences in my life and just keep them going. Sounds a little like drug and alcohol addiction, doesn't it? Just can keep it going, right? And on the other hand, we have to keep all these other things away. So it's stressful. Most people's lives are stressful. You always got to, you know, try to get the things you want to make you happy. You're trying to keep out all the things you don't want that make you unhappy. Can you see how much work that is? And that's what human beings do. They're always working it. That's why they're stressed. But this is different because it's generating that happiness and well-being from inside. It's not dependent. Is that clear? So it sounds like we have some visitors. And we never know what's going to happen. So thank you. We will end the Dharma talk.